It's time to talk about Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. And now, here's Ira.
Well, I won't have to drum this show into your head, not with my guest, iconic drummer and arguably the most in-demand session drummer, Steve Gadd. His credits range from Trick, Korea, Paul Simon, and Steely Dan to Frank Sinatra. Well, Dr. Steve Gadd, along with the Grammy-winning Steve Gadd Band, will be performing in Myron's at the Smith Center this Saturday, August 10th at 5 and 8 p.m. For ticket information, go to thesmithcenter.com. And for everything about Steve Gadd, go to drstevegadd.com. And you can follow him on Instagram, Facebook, and X. And Steve, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You know, there's so many questions people can ask you, and I'm going to start with one only because you'll see why I ask it. You were on the Mickey Mouse Club.
Mm.
Was the host Jimmy Dodd?
Yeah.
Amazing. Okay. I was going to get that out of the way. Go ahead.
I was a guest on that show. You know, they used to have talent roundup day on Friday, and they'd bring in talent that they discovered, you know, from running little talent shows all over the U.S. And, you know, I was able to win one of those and appear on the show, and it was fun.
Did you get a sense? And you also met Walt Disney.
I met Walt Disney. I met Jimmy Dodd and Roy and all the Mouseketeers at that particular time.
What was it like meeting Walt Disney? I probably should have started with Walt, but I was testing you on Jimmy Dodd, so I had a feeling it was going to be that particular host. There have been others, obviously, in later years. But what was Walt Disney like from your perspective?
I met him. I was at where they shot the show, and he happened mm-hmm. to be there, and they were doing work, so we weren't able to really, you know, make a lot of noise. But I was introduced to him, and I got his autograph, and it was pretty exciting. Yeah,
I bet for a kid that young. Now, you started playing drums at about 11, which is
I started taking lessons around 11. I don't ever remember not playing. I think when I was three, you know, because I had been banging on things around the house, my uncle, my dad's brother, who was a drummer when he was in high school, you know, had a couple of pairs of sticks, and he showed me how to hold them we'd play along with John Philip Sousa marches, and we'd just like play along with the record, him and me. And that was when I was about three. And because I stuck with it, then when I was about 11, you know, it seemed like I was serious about it. So they, you know, we got teachers and stuff involved. So.
Right. And that's when you entered the Mickey Mouse Club competition.
Right.
So yeah, I had in my mind that it was 11, but you're right. It had to be earlier when you started.
Yeah, I started taking lessons when I was about, you know, 7 or 8.
You know, it's the typical story about the plumber who doesn't fix the stuff in his own house. Do you play in the house, and does your wife yell at you to keep the noise down? Or do you work out an arrangement?
No, you know, normally I've got a set of drums set up somewhere. Like one house, I had it down in the basement. Right now, we're new in relatively new in Vegas. I mean, we've been here about a year and a half, but I still have gear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where I lived before, so I'm not really set up. But that's one of the things we were doing today, is going through all the stuff in the garage to try to make some room so we could set some gear up. You know what I mean?
Yeah. How did you decide, or why did you decide to move to Las Vegas? Because I was surprised to find out you lived here when you and I were talking originally.
Well, I have a son that has a business here. So, we found a property that had a house and then a casita, a two-bedroom casita, so it worked out real well for, you know, to have family close. And so my son and his girlfriend live in the casita, and Carol and I live in the main house. And it's good to have family close by, because Carol's been dealing with some back issues, my wife Carol.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a little bit stressful leaving, because she's not been, 100%.
Right.
So, but with family close by, it helps a lot.
Is that the same son, Duke, who also performs in the band?
No, Duke is here. That's not. I'm talking about my other son, Giancarlo. Duke
okay.
is just came here. He was living in Hawaii, so he's staying with us now, and he's going to play with the band when we do this little run. So
yeah. Well, what's your take on Vegas? And then I want to talk about your career, but I'm just interested in these little side visits to parts of your life. What's your take on Vegas? You've only been here about a year and a half. So
I like it. I came here. Before that I was in upstate New York, and we moved to Phoenix, Arizona, because there was some work that was going to supposedly involve Duke and me. And it inspired the move. But, once we got out there, things didn't really work out. So, and it got hotter and hotter every summer, and politically it got more and more crazy. So this is a better fit for me. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like it's affordable. You know, the it's not as bad as LA for prices and stuff like that.
Sure.
And I got family here, so. And it's got people living here from all over. So I like that part of it. I like that.
And also, too, when you tour with the band, this is your base of operations now.
Well, this is where I live. Yeah. A lot of the other guys are in L.A.
Yeah, but you're the head guy, so it's your base of operations is what I meant.
Yeah.
In that sense. You've had a great career, and you still do, performing. And I referenced the session work, but you're also performing out and about and touring all the time as well. How did you originally decide to go into session work as opposed to performing with a band that was on tour, or a band that was stationed in one spot, which you don't really get that many bands anymore in that situation? You did in the old big band days, but not that much anymore.
Yeah. Well, when I went to New York in 71 or 72, and, the studio musicians back in those days were like stars to me. That, you know, there were people that I'd heard about. Some of them had their own recording contracts with record companies, and my goal was just to be able to support myself playing music. And when I got out of college and I went 3 years in the Army at Fort Meade. After that, I moved to New York, and my goal was to, do studio work, and things worked out. You know what I mean?
I think there's a difference between just wanting to work to be able to support your family in the field that you're in, music, and at the same time be in such great demand as a session musician. So there's that leap that you made, clearly, from a talent standpoint, that you were in demand all the time.
Well, I mean, I it didn't start out like I was in demand. I just started out like...
Right. No, I understand.
And the thing that was inspiring to me about doing that kind of work was the musicians that I had an opportunity to work with and get to know and learn from being in the studio with them. And that's how it started out. And then, you meet people you meet artists. Like I worked with Paul Simon, and then after I left New York, I continued to work with him for years after that, and a lot of the people, most of the people that I work with now are people that I had, come in contact with back in the day, you know what I mean? And they're still, they're still out there performing, and some of them still want to use me. So that's good, mm-hmm. you know.
When you're performing,
my goal was never to be like, you know, I was happy being a sideman, and you know, when I first started out, and being in the same room with all those great players was great for me, and anything else that happened to me, you know, career wise was an extension of that. You know what I mean? It was an extension of, you know, like connect, you know, like continuing, nurturing the connections that I made. And then when I moved away from New York, you know, I was still getting calls, but all my work, you know, because I moved away, all my work was on the road. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that changed the way things were going down business-wise, just because I wasn't in the city anymore. So I wasn't available for last-minute recording calls, and my work shifted from that to more live playing it shifted from the studio, because I moved out of New York in 87, and it's, you know, that's when it shifted from a lot of studio work to mostly live playing.
Was it tough, though, with the live playing, because in essence you're traveling a lot? Was it tough on you in terms of having to haul the drums, or did you use the drums that the venue provided, or was it a mix of the two?
No, I mean, well, normally, like the work I was doing on the road, I was doing tours that where they had a backline. So, you know, I had my own gear. You know what I mean? I wasn't carting the stuff around myself. At the beginning I was in the early 70s, but in 87 when I moved out of New York, it was like, you know, I was doing tours that had backline and drum techs and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So
that it does help.
Yeah. So that if I had to, you know, move the gear and set it up, I couldn't have done it.
I want to talk a little bit about what's coming up at the Smith Center. As I mentioned, you're going to be at Myron's at the Smith Center August 10th at 5 and 8 p.m. And I want to talk a little bit about what you're going to be doing. But just before we get there, when you were performing that way, it's a different feel. And I've talked about this with other guests who are musicians. When you're recording in a studio, and you've had albums as well, Grammy winning ones too. But when you're in a studio recording versus when you're performing live, there's obviously that different dynamic. You don't necessarily have an audience, although you may have some people in the studio watching, but there's also the ability to retake the number, which you can't really do in a live performance. So does, from your perspective as a musician and a creative person, does that get a little frustrating where if you're in a session situation where they want you to do the song again for the 88th take, or maybe I'm exaggerating, not 88th take, but the fifth take or the 10th take till they get it the way they want it?
You know, it's a different mindset for the studio from live. You know what I mean? It's like they're two different animals. You know, it takes a while to learn that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's, you know, like the more you do it, the more you understand, the more you to play, the more you record, the more you can hear stuff back. And, you know, you begin to learn what works in the studio and what works live. A lot of times what works in a live situation with a live audience, doesn't always work in the studio situation. You know what I mean? It can get to be too much information, mm-hmm. too much excitement. And, you know, and you have to, you know, you got to weed through that stuff. So, you know, because it doesn't all translate when you record it. You know what I mean? When you lose the sight thing, then, you know, it's all ears and, mm-hmm. and you know, if it's too much, it's just confusing. So,
but is it easier to put emotion into your performance on stage versus in the studio? I know it's two different hats you're wearing. You just mentioned how it's a whole different mindset, but are you able to communicate emotion in the
studio? Yeah, I mean, you do. It's in the studio, it's like you have to, I mean, if you're doing with a live rhythm section, it's about being able to, like, if I know what I'm going to do on the take, but not everyone in the band has their part together, then I'm not going to go for the take until we're all ready. Do you know what I mean? It's about knowing where everyone's at, knowing where the piece is musically and how close you are to getting a track, and knowing when you're going to go for it. You know what I mean? And that comes from just doing it a lot, you know, getting with different people and every session's different. Everybody gets there in their own time, and it doesn't make sense for me to go for it before everyone else is ready. You know what I mean?
But it takes your experience to know when everybody's ready, though.
Right, exactly. But the thing that happens now that didn't happen back in, you know, in the 80s and 70s is that because of Pro Tools and stuff, if I get a good take on the first one now, if I think it's a good one, because of the state-of-the-art equipment, I can get a take and then they can use that and play to it. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? So it's not like you got to do take after take like we used to have to do. You know what I mean? Now, because of the technology, like if I can go for it, and if I get my part, then I, you know, and everyone else doesn't, they can play to that track. So that's one of the nice changes that came about from technology.
Yeah, you don't have to be in the same studio. You can just record your separate tracks and listen to one and play to that if yours is the best one, and they follow it. I want to talk to you a little bit about, you've performed with so many people, and I do want to bring up Sinatra just because he's such a giant in the music field. Clearly, Paul Simon's another one. But with Sinatra, did you get the sense of his magnetism as a performer when you played with him? Because you're in a different position than the audience or in the studio. If it's a studio, it'd be the engineers, but you're in a different situation.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of security. I never did a session, you know, there was like Sinatra, that was one of a kind. And it was with a big band. And we'd go in and rehearse two or three songs in the morning. And then Frank Sinatra would come in the afternoon. They'd have the elevator waiting downstairs for him. You know what I mean? They had a lot of security. And he came in, you know, said hello, and then did a couple of takes on each song, and that was it. It wasn't a lot of hanging out and stuff, you know.
Right, right. But from your perspective as a musician, watching him perform as a singer, did you get that sense of that magnetism of his performance?
Oh yeah, he was fantastic, you know, unbelievable.
Speaking of great performers in your line of work, drummers, there's Buddy Rich. There's so many others. What's your take on Buddy Rich?
Oh, he was fantastic. I mean, there's a lot of great drummers, and I've, you know, I take ideas from all of them. You know what I mean? That's where the inspiration comes from, and you know, so I have a lot of guys that I've listened to along the way. Buddy's one of them. Gene Krupa, you know. Elvin Jones, Tony Williams, Max Roach, Art Blakey, Joe Jones, Philly Joe Jones. I listened to all of those guys, Jimmy Cobb. I continue to listen to my ears always go to the drums, and whenever I hear something that I like, I try to remember it and try to copy it and use it myself. You know what I mean?
I think you mentioned that earlier too, that the concept of learning, and you still are lifelong learning, in that you listen to things, you think you can pick something up from another musician. It doesn't matter whether it's a younger or older musician. If you hear something and you think, wow, this is great, and you're able to learn from that. And I think that's a secret of a great musician, is to be able to learn from others, no matter where you are in life or where you are in your career. You can always pick up something.
Yeah.
I think a lot of musicians, well, let me take that back. I don't say a lot of, I think there are some musicians that assume that they, not that they know everything, but they're at a certain level and they're comfortable with that. But you strike me as being always willing to learn something new, and that's where that creative process continues.
Yeah, when COVID happened, I started, when we do shows, I warm up for about 15 or 20 minutes before. That's what I used to do before COVID, you know, just with a pair of sticks on a table. And when COVID happened, you know, I was going to try and continue to do that warm up every day to keep myself ready for when work came back. But because of COVID and no work for such a long time, I mean, all of a sudden, you know, 15 minutes turned into a couple of hours, and it didn't even feel like it. You know what I mean? And it's sort of what happened is I got in that place creatively where information started to, new information just started to come to me, and that's continued to happen since COVID. You know, so I did one book, called Gadaments.
Yes, I was going to bring that up. I'm glad you're mentioning it now. Yes.
Yeah.
That was released in 2021, I think.
Right. And I got enough, you know, I've been working on this stuff, and, you know, like these new stickings just sort of keep coming to me, and I got enough for another book already, and it's all different stuff. It's all new stuff to me, which is great. You know what I mean? Because
absolutely,
it's not like I'm just playing to keep everything that I knew how to play before at a certain level. It's like there's still new things that are inspiring me.
You know? Yeah, no, that's great. Let's talk a little bit about your performance coming up again at the Smith Center at Myron's, August the 10th at 5 and 8 p.m. What approach are you going to take? What kind of songs are you going to be performing?
Well, I'm coming in with Mike Landau, Walt Fowler, Jeff Babko's playing keyboards and trombone, and Travis Carlton's playing bass, and Duke's playing percussion. And we've got, you know, Steve Gadd Band, we've got, you know, three or four albums out. So we'll do, you know, I'll pick some music, a little bit from each one of them. And everybody's in the band has written some stuff. So, you know, we'll include those and some covers and just try to have some fun playing some music. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And you mentioned your albums. They can find out more about that if they go to your website, which is DR, short for Doctor, Honorary Doctor, which we'll talk about, drstevegadd.com. When you got the honorary degree from, is it Berklee School of Music?
I did at Berklee, and I got one
from College of Music, I should say. Yeah.
And I got one from Eastman School of Music at the University of Rochester. So that's where I went to school. So I've got two honorary doctorates.
Nice. Do you find that now that you're in Las Vegas and the Smith Center is so accessible to you geographically wise, meaning that you're nearby since you're as the Smith Center is in downtown Las Vegas and you're in Las Vegas, I have a feeling you're going to be playing there more often. And I think that there's some other opportunities here that down the road as well, just because you're physically here now, which would be great for people to see you. When you first started out, did you have any concept of where you would be now? In other words, you started at an early age. You had the Mickey Mouse contest at age 11. You had a chance to meet at that early age Walt Disney, which is pretty impressive for those of us who know who Walt Disney is and was. And you've met so many other and performed with so many other people over the decades. So did you have any concept that, that you'd be where you are today from when you first started out?
No, I couldn't have imagined it. You know what I mean? And actually back when I started out, I mean, this, what I'm doing now wasn't even really happening back then. This is a mm-hmm. whole new, the industry just keeps evolving, you know what I mean? So, you know, I've seen it peak and come down and go back up in different ways, you know. I'm glad to still be a part of it, you know.
And I think, too, you mentioned earlier your son, your first son, but your second son, or vice versa, you're both sons, is playing with you. And so that's kind of be kind of cool, too.
That's fun. That's
yeah.
fun.
And, you know, two different generations, and it's nice to see musicians who are related to each other performing on the stage.
Yeah, it's nice to have my son there, you know?
Yeah.
'Cause like, you know, there was a lot of time when I was traveling when I wasn't home, and, you know, so they grow up sort of without, they grew up without me really. I mean, I was there, but not
consistently.
Yeah. You know, so it's nice to have the time now.
Maybe. And I'm sure they're old enough, too. They understand why you weren't home all the time, because you were working.
Yeah.
So, yeah, as a father in that sense. So, are you, any new albums coming up that you're going to be recording?
Well, I did we did an album with this keyboard player in Germany, Simon Osliner, with Will Lee. Simon and a guitar player from Germany. That's going to be coming out soon. But not, you know, I don't know. I'm not sure if we're going to record again with my band. I'm not sure what's happening there. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing more live playing than recording. You know what I mean? Because I'm just not living where there's, like, we're in New York or L.A. where there's still, you know, that kind of business going on.
Right. But Las Vegas is changing and to a large extent in terms of becoming more of a mecca for production. I know from the motion picture side, studios are coming in here, and there's a lot of recording studios here.
There's a lot going on, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And there was, up to the musician strike years ago, there was a very big musician presence here. And there still is, but not as big as it was before the musician strike. So, but I think you'll find your way and navigate your way very easily here in Las Vegas. Last question before I let you go. Are you thinking of writing any songs?
You know, I contribute when I'm with other guys that are writing, but the way I can write is I can write drum parts, you know, these drum books. I know how to do that. And in terms of writing music, with other people, I don't really spend a lot of time doing that, but I think where my experience comes in handy is I have from playing with so many different people, like I have a good sense of how the song, the form should be. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
How long one section should be, if it's too long, you know, so I can come up with those kind of, they're writing ideas, but you know, you don't get writing credit for that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I get you. Exactly. Well, that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Steve Gadd. He's along with the Grammy-winning Steve Gadd Band, performing in Byron's at the Smith Center this Saturday, August 10th at 5 and 8 p.m. For ticket information, go to thesmithcenter.com. For everything about Steve Gadd, go to DR, short for doctor, drstevegadd.com. And you can follow him on Instagram, Facebook, and X. And Steve, thanks for being on the show.
You're welcome, Ira. Thanks for having me, and it was nice to meet you.
Same here. See you next time.
You've been listening to Talk About Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world.
Anything you want us to be.